Vessel taking on water, five persons on board. So, oh, this is a real deal.
Boy, swimmer, throw us away.
When you go out there on any duty day, it's dangerous. Heavy seas, heavy surf, breaking surf. It's a fight of your life for everybody out there.
When you hit the water, game on. It's time to go. No mistakes, no errors.
It is a rush of adrenaline. It's the cool part of my job.
It's always a blessing and gives job satisfaction on being able to help people.
You know, the reason why we all do this job is to save lives.
The vast Alaskan wilderness, a place where beauty is cloaked by danger. Here every day, 350 highly trained men and women risk their lives to save others. America's deadliest waters are protected by Coast Guard Alaska.
See you later.
I'm Commander Joseph Deer. I'm the operations officer for U.S. Coast Guard Air Station Kodiak, Alaska. It's a very famous unit across the Coast Guard that's widely recognized as probably the most arduous area to fly in.
We have hundreds of search and rescue cases we do a year, thousands of miles apart.
When you stretch Alaska over the continental United States, it goes from about Virginia out to Utah.
So even though it's only one state, it's absolutely vast.
There's about 17,000 people on the island of Kodiak. A little under half of everybody in town is affiliated with the Coast Guard in some way. You know, Kodiak, there's not a lot of middle ground. You either kind of love it or you hate it. Those of us that love it, I'm one of them. We look for multiple tours up here, and it's usually fairly easy to get because there's lots of those that come up here and say, no way, it's too remote, it's Alaska, it's too cold, too windy, whatever. But once you get your work week done, it's got just some absolutely world-class outdoor activities. Of course, we have the Kodiak grizzly bears. Last night I heard there were 5,000 of them on the island. The halibut salmon fishing is just fantastic. They're 20-pound fish, and the line just goes screaming out. They're a lot of fun to catch. It's just fantastic. It's a great place to live and to raise a family. Can't say enough good about it. Love the place.
I'm a lieutenant in the Coast Guard and pilot and commander of our H-60 helicopters. The beeper went off and vessel taking on water, five persons on board. About 80 miles northeast of Kodiak. So, oh, this is a real deal.
I'm Vincent Jansen. I'm on duty here at Coast Guard Air Station Kodiak. It was about 11 a.m. when we got the call. They said, here's your latitude and longitude. We've got five people in the water. Go. We don't know the condition of the survivors. We don't know their age, if they can swim, what kind of gear they have. So these are all things you have to manage as you're heading out there. I don't normally run to the plane. I think it's a bad habit, but today I ran to the plane because we had people going in the water. We'd flown for about 75 miles at about 150 knots, between 300 and 500 feet to stay below a cloud layer that we had all the way out there. And then once we got within about 5 miles, and you're scanning a number of different sensors, obviously using the old eyeball to look for something out there, but we were using the radars as well. And you're trying to pick up any signs of distress, orange life rafts, flares, smoke. These are all things that mariners definitely use to get our attention. And sure enough, as we were within about 2 miles of the position, we saw a flare just off to the right side of the helicopter.
Wait, we got stuff over here.
Boats on scene. They are alive. I think there's plenty of clear areas where we can put them in.
I agree. For the most part, it's clear.
Well, up here in Kodiak, Alaska, we're dealing with temperatures. The water is right around 40 degrees right now, and that's going to give you very limited survival time if you're actually in the water. This captain and this crew had survival suits, they had emergency equipment, and they had rafts that were serviceable. They were prepared to be in a survival situation.
Ready for one free fall deployment of the swimmer.
We hovered over to where the life raft was. Now you're going to have to watch the swells here and roger that. Easy down. Okay, there's 15.
And I free fell out of the helicopter.
And you can deploy swimmer.
Roger. Deploy swimmer. Lower's away. Lower's in the water.
A free fall deployment is definitely the fastest way to get a swimmer in the water, to either assess the situation or just to try and help somebody out.
Lower's okay. Clear back to left 30. Lower's swimming out to 3 o'clock.
It was daytime, which is a requirement. We can't do it at night. And the seas weren't terrible. I mean, we can certainly do a free fall deployment when the seas are huge, but I might hesitate then because I might not get them back. That's always what you worry about. You put them in the water, are you going to be able to get them back?
And now you can rig the basket.
Roger, I'm advising the captain then.
Yeah, swimmer, he's made contact with the survivors in the raft. We're standing by for a head count.
Swimmer, go ahead.
We have 05
POV, including one child. It ain't that pretty out there, so we don't want to stick around here too long.
I swam over to them, got inside, talked to them for a little bit, and I noticed that they had a 14-year-old male child on board. He was the first one to go.
I'm all rigged for the basket. Basket's going out the cabin door.
The entire time, I was just trying to hold on to him and talk to him, trying to calm him down.
Basket's 5 feet off the water. Hold it.
Come in.
Roger.
As soon as the helicopter hit us with the rotor wash, he started freaking out.
He was just a little bit scared. It felt like the water was going into his mouth.
They're right there at the aircraft right now, okay? And hold. Easy back and hold. He's getting blown all over the place.
Position of this basket in the water. This is no good.
I'm holding him to the best of my ability, dealing with him trying to roll over and coughing and yelling. And he was just scared. Boy,
we're gonna wear him out. Well, let's just do it real quick. Okay,
yeah, just do it. Easy left and hold. Soros River going left.
I wonder if he's tired or any.
Having a hard time getting the survivor in the basket. We're and hold. We're getting blown all over the place.
I got him into the basket.
Basket is clear of the water, clear back and left.
And it definitely was one of the hardest things I've ever done.
Basket's halfway up. Ralphie is directly underneath the aircraft.
Roger.
Basket's just below the cabin. Bring your basket up to the cabin door.
Roger. That was maybe a little too close that time.
And we got him up into the helicopter, and the rest of the evolutions went pretty smooth.
Try to take the load. Take the load.
Oh, that was a heavy one.
Floor is clear of the water. Clear back 20.
Okay, left. I'm just going to hold.
Roger. Floor is halfway up. Swing it a little bit.
That's what it was.
Floor is inside of the cabin. Hoist is complete.
Okay. People in Alaska are generally very, very well prepared because they know just how dangerous it can be if they go in the water up here. It's impressive, honestly. It really is.
The raft is sinking.
Oh, it is?
Yep.
Oh, man.
Let's get out of here.
Yep.
Jumping off a listing boat, scariest thing ever happened in my life.
I don't know what happened.
It's like that perfect storm, you know, and it happened so fast. That's what Alaska weather does to you.
When you go out there on any duty day, it's dangerous.
When you get in the water, your teeth hurt. You know what's cold when teeth hurt.
Today we did a really good case. The captain did everything right. They were in a raft, number one, all in Gumby suits, which was great too. They also shot off flares just like they're supposed to, so we could see where they were once we got close and got in there and hoisted them all out of the water with a basket, got the swimmer recovered and came back here.
Well, we got about the middle of the Gulf, leaving Kodiak on our way to Whittier. Water started getting pretty rough, pretty big. Some of the swell was breaking over the bow and blew out one of the hatches, blew it clean off.
I don't know what happened.
All I know is that engine room started filling up with water, and it filled up quick, and it didn't take long before that thing was filled up and went over on her side. My 14-year-old son was the first one off the boat. Those guys were in their survival suits. They were getting off the boat. I barely got mine on. Glad I got it on. While the boat was starting to sink, I was still trying to get my arms in. Happened really quick. Probably she sunk in 25 minutes.
As I was going over the side, I kind of hit my face on it, went face first in the water. Yeah, yeah. jumping off a listing boat. Scariest thing ever happened to me in my life. It's like that perfect storm, you know, that Clooney movie up in New England where everything just happens all at once. Well, that's what happened, and it happened so fast. That's what Alaska weather does to you. It puts you in a position where you better be ready, or you may be swimming with the fishes.
Hey, no, you guys did good. I appreciate it. Thanks for getting my crew out of that water.
Yeah, we saw that flare right away.
Well, I told them until they can see that chopper, don't shoot it.
There's nothing more satisfying than being able to look those guys in the eyes and you know, you get a handshake, you get a thank you. You know, the reason why we all do this job is to save lives.
That kid as well.
That first one was hard. That first one was tough.
You all right? Yeah. Good to go.
All right. It's out here.
Way to go. It was my first big star case. It was good to finally put my training to the test, and I couldn't have asked for a better crew.
Currently in our program here at Air Station Kodiak, Alaska, we have two airmen in the trainee program. You could think of them as rescue swimmer candidates. They work out with the rescue swimmers on a daily basis. The workouts may involve running, a lot of swimming, of course, a lot of underwater work. There's a lot that goes into seeing if these candidates have what it takes to ultimately become a U.S. Coast Guard rescue swimmer.
Both myself and the person I'm going through the program with right now, Airman Culver, we get challenged daily through our workouts.
Lay to rest. Crank them out. 10 of them, go.
One, two.
Now, I'm Charles Fowler, and I'm a Chief Aviation Survival Technician. All ASTs are helicopter rescue swimmers.
10. Up tall. Hold the pool deck.
Airman Music and Airman Culver, they're in the pool 2 days a week and at least working out 3 days a week. And they start out from ground zero, and we try to build them up to where they can start into the AST Airman program.
It definitely helps having somebody with you to help look out for you. Just that companionship in this program is very beneficial.
Gear on, go! 3 minutes and wasted away, go, get it on.
Michael Culver, I'm from Taylorsville, Georgia. My dad was in the Marines, and I felt that, you know, I knew I wanted to serve my country and do time in the military, so I joined the Coast Guard and decided I'm gonna go rescue swimmer.
You have problems with your mask here, Culver?
Yes, Chief.
What's the problem?
There's just fogging. I've got some anti-fog.
Wouldn't be a problem if you had pre-flied your gear, right?
No, it wouldn't have, Chief.
What's one of the key responsibilities for any desiring AST?
Pre-flight all gear.
You'll owe me for that. Music, you got a problem with your mask over there?
I just spit in it, Chief.
Why's it not on your face? Why'd you snorkel not on your mouth, Culver?
Yeah.
Underwater. Ready. Set. Go.
Most of our swimmers are proficient swimmers. However, what we are looking for is someone with a level of water confidence. I'll quote a former Master Chief, we want them to be an element of calm in a world of chaos. So it's not the perfect swim stroke or the fastest swimmer. It's the most proficient and the guy who can stand the endurance to remain out there for that period of time.
Go! Training, it can be stressful at times. It's more than physical, though. You know, it's mental. You've got to be able to hang in there.
Front approach. Coast Guard!
They want somebody that's going to get everything they've got, because there may be a point where you're going to have to put yourself at danger, and they don't want somebody that's going to quit on them.
Patient, feigning.
Ready for one free fall deployment of the swimmer.
When we first saw the boat, you know, I was a little concerned maybe putting the swimmer down, and it was smaller than what we normally see.
My name's Claude Morrissey. I'm a rescue swimmer. I'm from Roxbury, New Jersey. It's God's country.
Training we go through is every day we swim, we work out, we buddy tow, we wrestle in the water. It's this way we're ready to go.
right now. Me and Pedersen Stoker are prepping for a training flight.
What size shuck headers do you have?
16s. Big feet, know what they say. Big shoes. Yoo-hoo! Saving people's lives in the Coast Guard is exciting to me. I love my job, I'm animated, I got a big smile on my face. It's just cool. I'm a good-looking man, America. This better not wind up on YouTube. You pull a good rescue off as a crew, and you're just like, man, how do we do that? I'll do this for free if I have to. I love my job. When you go out there on any duty day, it's dangerous. You always got fog, you always got rain, you always got wind. And you put that together in a helicopter, it's not a good combination. Roger. Heavy seas, heavy surf, break and surf. It's a fight of your life for everybody out there.
Some of the weather challenges are the wind, the waves, the visibility. Seems like it's nasty all the time. When you get in the water, it's immediate shock. I mean, your teeth hurt. You know what's cold when your teeth hurt.
When we go out every day on duty, you know, you kiss your wife, you kiss your kids. That's what gives you the strength to do it, is knowing that if my son was out there in trouble, or my daughter, or my wife, I want somebody to go get him.
Who's your favorite daddy?
Am I?
Am I?
My strength is definitely my wife and my kids and my coworkers. I mean, huge strength.
Love you.
I want to do that again.
You know, up here in the middle of nowhere, if you ain't got your family, you ain't got nothing. My wife's a big support of my life. The kids make it all fun. I do what I do for the family. They hook me up.
I worry about him. In the beginning, when we were married in Houston, he would call and tell me if he was going to go out on a case. And then after a while, I just said, please don't do it anymore, because I don't want to know. But I'm proud of him. I don't tell him a lot because his head might swell. But no, I'm proud of him.
She got it so bad. She got it so bad.
All right, guys, stretch out for a minute on your own, then we'll start our monthly PT exam. Today, we're going to start out with general cardiovascular exercises and muscle-building strength exercises. Each component gives an idea of what the person's capability is in each evolution. Remember, proper form for you two airmen.
All right, Chief.
Proper form is key. If a member needs to push something away or pull something towards their body, the push-ups are an indication of the strength they have in that area. The pull-ups and chin-ups are even more important because that simulates us pulling up onto the side of a vessel, pushing up over, and then getting into the vessel itself. In the pool.
Any AST candidate, what we're looking for is water confidence. That is the key for our job. Most individuals can do the land portion of the physical fitness requirements. It's the pool portion that seems to separate.
Have you ever injured your knee before?
No, I'm not, Chief.
No leg injuries, ankle injuries, no nothing?
Broke my right ankle about almost 2 years ago, Chief.
Okay, show it.
All right, Chief.
You're short stroke. You're like just kind of doing that. You've got to get a full stroke.
All right, Chief.
Character, gentlemen. Character is what builds you. It's at heart. Grab your sour babies.
Hey, Chief.
100 yards. Go.
The sour baby, all it is a dive break. It's a 10-pound dive break. Just keeping it up out of the water that amount of time. It's just basically trying to simulate keeping a survivor's head out of the water.
Oh, what's wrong with you? Why can't you keep that above water? Get your gear off. Go.
Thank you.
As far as the ASTs and the Chief's jobs, their job is to create that stress that we're going to feel when we're jumping in the ocean to save somebody. So you're there to see if you've got what it takes to go out in the real world and function well and not be nervous in time to save somebody's life.
I think your mast strap's all twisted. I think the snorkel's all twisted. Why don't you fix that real quick?
All right, Chief.
Are you nervous, Culver?
A little bit, Chief.
Why? Did I make you nervous?
No, Chief.
Why are you nervous? What seems to be the problem?
No idea, brother. No, Chief.
In the water, down the shallow end, go.
This is a professional arena, and, you know, it's kind of that cliche with teachers, you know, they kind of are harder on their best students. Well, we're hard on all of them, but that's because we expect the very best from all of them.
Oh, my goodness.
We just received a call for a vessel with a 61-year-old male on board who was vomiting blood.
260 nautical miles offshore. Well, that sets alarm bells off already. And it's like, wow, that's a long ways away.
So we were already on a mission in the air when we got the call. We're over here in some radio chatter about a boat with a guy having issues. So we took down the position, found out it was only about 30 miles away. We were pretty much prepping to go. So when the divert call did come, we were ready to able to get on scene quickly.
Here's 30 feet, check swimmer. Roger, check the swimmer. Lure's ready. Okay, and you can pretty much calm me down. I don't want to go any closer.
When I first saw the boat, I was a little worried about the size of it. Smaller than what we normally see. You know, I was a little concerned maybe putting the swimmer down. It was pitching pretty good for such a small boat. But we definitely need to put our swimmer down because we didn't really know what was wrong with the guy.
Easy down. Okay, there's 15. Give you wipers, and you can deploy swimmer. Roger. Deploy swimmer.
This is one of my first cases. Got to actually get lowered down to a boat because I'm one of the younger guys.
Lowers okay. Clear back to left 30. Roger. Easy down.
Roger. When I'm in that situation, all your training just kind of kicks into gear. The flight medic lowered me down. You know, I want to be able to assess my patient as quick as possible so I can bring him up to the cabin safely.
And hook 5 feet off the water and hold it. Copy in. Roger, easy forward right.
I got on scene. Patient fainting when he would stand up. And once I found that out, we decided to take his wife, so we sent her up first so she could get situated.
Position of this basket of water, this is no good.
Whenever we recover anybody from a vessel or from the water, they're going to be clearly shaken, a little distressed.
Basket is clear of the water, clear back. Roger.
What I try to do is just reassure them that this is routine, this is kind of what we do, and we're very professional, and just give them a little bit of peace of mind and let them know that everything's going to be okay.
That couple is out of Florida, and this is their first time in Alaska, and it puts a damper on their vacation, but they got to go home safe. It makes me feel proud to help people. It's not just about the glory or anything like that. It's just, you know, helping out the person.
Cabin doors are closed, so we can open up. Roger.
It's always a blessing and gives job satisfaction on being able to help people. Yeah, it really makes the job worthwhile, and I love my job, I guess.
Shallow end, go. The whole premise of this program is saving lives. When they hit the water, game on. It's time to go. No mistakes,
no errors, because once they get into the field, they can't afford to make any mistakes. They could potentially lose their life or someone else.
I see your mask. There's water in there. Take it off.
Mike, is it just water in it, or what's going on?
There's water in it. It's like fishbowl, half and half, and he won't put his snorkel in his mouth.
So he's coming up without the snorkel in his mouth?
Yeah, and he's like...
Culver, over here.
This is a simple mask on a drill, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
When did we start doing this?
Since day one.
Day one, right?
Yes, Chief.
Struggling bad on it. Week 14. How's the mask supposed to be when you come up?
It's supposed to be cleared.
What's the snorkel supposed to be?
In my mouth.
Has it been yet?
No, Chief.
Get it done.
All right, Chief.
In Airman Culver's case, he's been through 14 weeks of this program. He's a stellar candidate as far as physical fitness, but he's just frazzled. And you really see, oh my goodness, this person may not be able to handle lots of stress inputs at one time.
What part of under did you not understand? One breath, underwater, come up, go.
You went through rescue swimmer school, you would get this knot in your stomach, kind of like your first date. You know, you're going to pick your girl up for the first date, and you're like, oh, man, my stomach is just killing me. You have to stay in shape mentally and physically. You know, we have airmen here going through pre-training. This is five guys, two will drop. Then from there, two more will drop. So your attrition rate, for every five airmen you see, you get one guy. It's hard, but I'm sure if you were drowning in the ocean, you'd want the best of the best coming out to get you. We don't accept anything less than perfect.
We have not made it through one single drill today without something not being done correctly. Not one. Okay?
Hi, Chief.
How many mistakes are we afforded in the operating field in the line of duty?
Zero, Chief.
Zero, Chief.
How many mistakes are we afforded when we're working on life-saving equipment?
Zero, Chief.
That's the tolerance that I expect.
You need to be ready, both mentally and physically. So as far as physically, I feel I'm there. And mentally, you know, that can be tricky when it comes to underwater. So that's something I've got to work on.
We just received a call from our Coast Guard SAR mission coordinator over here in Juneau, Alaska. They directed a launch for an H-60 helicopter to conduct a medevac for a vessel with a 61-year-old male on board who was in a critical medical condition. He was vomiting blood and was going in and out of consciousness.
I am going flying.
Today, the call came in, and we were actually preparing to go on another flight. We're actually going to do an aircraft swap in Cordova. My mind's thinking, all right, Cordova, a little lunch, a little sunshine, we're good to go. And, you know, the SAR alarm goes off. So now it's a total different train of thought. Now let's get ready. We've got a guy, we've got a medevac, and get out there and help this guy out.
Got to show him that I can still do it.
Cool. Still, occasionally, you need to go out there and show the boys you can do it, and you don't mind doing it, and you won't ask them to do anything that you won't do or haven't done.
Because of the distance down to scene, approximately 260 nautical miles, which is right near the maximum range for H-60 helicopters, we directed that they put on a maximum bag of fuel, which is 6,000 pounds. We also directed a launch of our Coast Guard C-130 airplane to provide communications cover and to provide advanced coordination with the vessel on scene.
It was 260 nautical miles offshore. Well, that sets alarm bells off already, because that's moving on to the end of our range because of fueling and what type of hoisting we may have to do once we get on scene. And it's like, wow, that's a long ways away.
61 Harold, man. Got my range.
Ops, can I get an ETA when the corpsman is going to be on board? Pamela's off the hospital. She should be on site any minute.
Flying on the 60 here in Alaska, we have the ability to carry corpsmen along with us. And these individuals can do higher advanced care that rescue swimmers can't do. They can push IVs, they can administer certain drugs and things like that. So it is, like in this case particularly, it is an advantage to have someone like that along with us.
Chief, can we go without the corpsman?
I mean, I'm good with it, sir. It's just at what cost? Yes, the advanced medical care that I can't provide. Potentially
basically losing blood, you know, it's obvious, handy.
Okay. I just wanted to check, because it turns out to be a major fiasco as far as the clock is not as aware or whatever.
This is a long flight.
Corman, just arrived.
When we have a known medevac, it's common for us to bring a flight corpsman along with us. And they have a more advanced level of EMT skills that they apply more readily.
I'm Kamala G. LaCroix, and I'm an HS3 at the Rockmore King Clinic in Kodiak. And, you know, we save lives one at a time and do our medevacs when we're needed.
All right, you guys also take off? All right, take off.
The engines are actually going already. They're ready to take off. And so I look in the cabin and I see a flight mech that I know, Mangum, and also the chief of the air stays in there, Chief Fowler. And I was excited to see the chief was in there. I've never had the opportunity to fly with him before. So he was our swimmer.
C-130 was able to get there well in advance of the H-60. C-130 does about 2.5 times the speed of the helicopter. Got it on scene with the fishing vessel Seabird, a 167-foot converted former military naval vessel.
So what do you know so far?
Only this, it's GI bleed. 1-year-old male.
The litter is basically a stretcher, and the litter is always a demanding hoist. It's like carrying a 12-foot board and you're trying to walk through a 4-foot door. You gotta turn it sideways, you gotta pull it in the right way and sort of work it like a puzzle.
Approach speed to 100 feet. You gotta keep an eye on it. You're good. Roger. Yeah, that works.
One of the things as a AST chief that I bring to the table that maybe some of the younger guys don't, when I'm out on the search and rescue cases, I've done this for a few years. I've seen some of these things. I've been through some of these things. So I don't have the amped up energy of, oh my goodness, this is my first one. The game slows down for me. What is really minutes and seconds to me seems much longer when I'm assessing a patient or performing a rescue.
You have to respond to someone on Tuesday now. That's not Roger. That looks like it's doable. Roger. Looks like a pretty big area, with the exception of that center tower there, so we'll see.
This one turns out to be a large vessel with several cranes on it, a large superstructure in the center. And whenever you're dealing with obstacles on a boat, it's always a potential hazard for hoisting conditions. You don't want to put your swimmer into it. You don't want to let them contact it. You don't want to get things tangled up in it. When things get tangled, things go bad.
Okay, hoist is on.
So we get Chief rigged up. He always goes down with his fins and his goggles just in case he has to get wet, abandon ship, whatever. We take no chances.
Swimmer's ready. Take swim outside cabin for a load check. Load check complete. Swimmer's on his way down.
When we're deployed down to a vessel, we have the wind coming at our face from the helo. You see the motion of the seas below you. You see that the vessel's still underway, and you're being lowered down, and you're flying forward at the same time. So all of these things are dynamics which play into it. You know, when you first experience this, it's kind of a different phenomenon. Later in your career, it becomes second nature.
So we put him down on the vessel. He gives me the thumbs up, calls for the litter. It's a sign. They put it over the head, they make an L. That lets us know without even having to use radio communication that's what he wants.
Litter's going down.
My swimmer's on deck. We get the litter on deck. Chief gives me the thumbs up. I realize it's going to take a minute, and he disappears down deck. Whenever you see your swimmer disappear, you know, this small amount of anxiety, you want to make sure you keep eyes on him at all times. That's what we train for.
I am trying to get eyes on him because I'd just like to see, you know, what am I dealing with here? Because you never know. The pilots are saying he's looking kind of green in the gills. And, you know, I just want to see if he's hypothermic or what kind of things we need to do to help this patient.
Ready, have the rig to pick up. The litter is clear of the deck. Litter's on its way up. Litter's coming up.
Breaking litter. All right, breaking litter inside his cabin.
Roger. Once we have the patient back on board the aircraft, the next thing is to retrieve myself. They'll lower the rescue hook down to me. I'll clip in and reverse the way that I was deployed.
Rover's cleared deck. Chase command. All right, chase command. But we are definitely ready for 4 flight.
All right, how you doing? I'm okay.
Are you guys a 30 IV?
Yes, sir.
Wondering how difficult that is. Moving helicopter.
In this case, the Corman and I tagged up together. She immediately started putting in an IV and getting some vital signs and stuff, and I started out with the oxygen administration. Had I not had the Corman there, I could not have administered the IV. It's above my scope.
Hey, Pam, if you need anything, let me know. Otherwise, I'll stay out of your way.
An IV, which is probably the most important part with all the blood loss. He's got to get that volume to be able to press it through, you know, his heart to pump it through the body. After that, put a big wool blanket to keep him covered up and warm because it gets cold in there. We had the heat going from the front. We were all sweating, but as long as the patient is comfortable, you know, that's what we're there for.
Hey, sir, what's our ETA to home plate? Oh,
an hour and a half.
Hour and a half, roger.
A 61-year-old male, 260 nautical miles offshore, and he had some internal bleeding of some type. Primary thing was getting down to the vessel and hoist him up to the helicopter. At any time we have a long transit like this, the key thing is to make sure that the patient's as comfortable as we can make them.
Not feeling good, definitely.
In our two-hour transit back from the vessel, he got a little sick on the way back. When you get that situation, there's not much you can do on the aircraft, so we just tell them, you know, relax as much as you can, and if it happens, it happens.
Oh, my gosh, he's got some black coming out of his nose.
Okay.
It's bad, yeah.
Okay. It might be blood, but it's not active.
Yeah.
No, it's okay. Not okay, but...
Yeah. Ready for a clutch.
He was in pretty good spirits. He tried to joke a couple of times. At one point, I told him we were 10 minutes out. He said, make it 5 minutes. He wanted on deck quickly.
We've got oxygen and an IV going for him, and he's looking a little bit better. He's got color back, about the third bag of IV fluid.
All right, here we go. Watch out.
Once we complete a SAR case and we're able to transfer that patient to higher level care, it's always comforting to know that an individual is going to be able to return to their normal life after you've helped them get them off of an emergent situation. It goes more along the holistic views of Alaska. You know, we're here for the fishermen, the fishermen are here for the economy. You know, so it's a complete circle.
It is a rush of adrenaline. It's the cool part of my job. You know, it's kind of that bad side you actually get to be a part of, you know, so I'm privileged and happy to be part of that.
You guys ready? Let's hit the beach. Get your stuff on, go.
Get your jackets.
Come on.
You know, after a rescue like the Seabird, going out there and putting yourself in harm's way, it's really nice to come home, get some family time, and just get away where we can go and be isolated and spend some quality time with each other.
Come here, bud.
My wife, Michelle, is my best friend. We've been married 10 years now. We have 3 wonderful children. Audrey's 10, Autumn's 7, and Jacob's 4.
What's up, Autumn?
Our favorite place to go is definitely Boy Scout Beach. It's right off of the Buskin River. There's always plenty of driftwood, plenty of wood for a fire, and it's a great place to just get away and get isolated and spend that family time.
Dad!
What?
Daddy! Stop now!
You're gonna slide out the edge.
Our favorite thing to do is have a bonfire, definitely roast some s'mores out on the beach, do some beach combing, looking for seashells, and use those things to decorate the house. There's some fun stuff to climb on out there, trees, and climbing the ropes up the side of the hill, and just getting away and having that family time together.
Be careful!
Oh, I'm a rock.
rock star. You know, I ham it up when I get home. I kiss the old lady and tell her I saved lives and tell the kids their dad just flew in a helicopter. And it feels real good to go home at the end of the day and know what job we do and the difference that we make in people's lives.
You're crazy.
I'm a little jealous, I'll say that, that I stay home and take care of kids and clean a house. You know, I'm cleaning toilets, and he comes home, he's like, yeah, you know, I've been saving people all day, flying around. I saw all kinds of animals today, and, you know.
I think it's cool, but I wouldn't want to be up in that helicopter with a wide door open. I'm afraid of heights.
Me too.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to do that.
Me too.
I feel like I've grown a lot in these short 4 months. I was taking a run this weekend just around the peninsula, you know, kind of getting good workout and cardio in. I slowed down to a walk and took my headphones out, and I started listening to the ocean and just stuff going on around me, and I kind of related that to my life situation.
Go!
Feel like you're letting your team member down?
Yes, Chief.
You should.
I realize I'm 21 years old. I'm not ready at the moment
to be a rescue swimmer.
But let them know that it wasn't something that I felt I was really ready for at the time. I didn't want to have somebody in need of me and I lose composure when they needed me the most. And then we wind up with two people in danger.
At any point in time that the individual decides that they do not want to continue with training, they have the option of saying DOR. It's disenroll on request. Not everybody is an AST. Not everybody can be an AST, and not everybody wants to be. In Airman Culver's case, he never quit physically. You know, even when he struggled at times, he still pushed forward and pushed forward. So, you know, you admire an individual who gives 100% effort, and then when they decide it's not for them, then, you know, you have to respect that. That's an individual choice.
Senior Chief Hall, Chief Fowler, all of the ASTs, they're really great leaders. They really instilled a lot in me. The lessons that I've learned and how much I've matured and grown, I don't think that I would have gotten that experience being on any other unit.